by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Thanks, how you guys doing?
Me, down here.
Happy to be here.
It's Pink Love.
That's still happening. Ah, that's a joke from last night that for some reason my computer just fired off right now without me even willing it to happen. We got Max on the board back in the studio. How you doing,
yo.
Max? All right, Max, your job tonight, besides obviously keeping me on time, playing music, and interacting with me on air, is also to keep an eye on the Lakers-Nuggets game and tell me if LeBron goes over 27 points, because I have some money on it. That's apparently LeBron picked tonight to be the night where he turned 50. I didn't know that that would happen, but the man can't make a layup anymore, and it was sad.
He's not even on the floor.
He's not on the floor? Of course he's not. He's probably booking a bed in a nursing home right now.
Well, he's
looking at his 401k.
Well, did you see his son is moving, transferring high schools, and they got
Ronnie?
A multi-million-dollar donation to the new high school. I think it's
that he's going to be going to.
Yeah, and a whole new facility.
Well, I mean, whatever. That's the way money works in the world. I mean, Jason Tatum on the Celtics, he went to. He's from St. Louis, where I'm from, and he went to this incredibly expensive high school with a French name. That's how you know that it's fancy and expensive. It's got a French name. I don't remember what it is now because I'm too poor mouth to say it. If it came out of my leaking lower middle class mouth, then it would just sound disastrous, and French people all over the area would be driving into the Puget Sound. All right. I want to start here tonight, and I don't. This is an exasperating story because I cannot believe for the life of me that the governor, Jay Inslee, that his intent with this was like, you know what? I don't care if you guys know if pedophiles are moving into your community or not. Yeah, we're going to move the worst, most disgusting people in your community. They're going to move them in. They're going to be walking around. You're going to be bumping into them at QFC. It's going to be hilarious for me, because that's the way I look at things. I just like disrupting things and forcing you guys to accept degenerate, horrible people. I don't believe that that's the case, though some people are making it to be the case with Inslee. What I'm talking about is yesterday, Governor Inslee took out his line item veto pen when he was handed the budget. There was a part of the budget that was written by Republicans all about community notification in regards to sexually violent predators placed in LRAs, which stands for Less Restrictive Alternative Housing. That means if you live in a community in Washington, and I'm assuming most of you do, they might put somebody, or actually not just one person, but groups of people, in a house in your community, and they might be, quote, sexually violent predators. These are people who have gotten out of jail, they're transitioning, they've gotten treatment. They're more or less being put in a halfway house in your community. It's understandably upsetting for a lot of people, especially people with children. Or just, you know, people with wives and daughters, etc. All the Republicans were asking for was community notification and the ability to maybe have a meeting and talk about it. And Inslee went, nah, can't do it, because that will delay the availability to place these offenders in the areas, and the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution does ensure that even sexually violent predators under civil commitment can and must be released if it's shown that they are no longer mentally ill or dangerous. And before we get too much further down this road, I'm just going to temper things a little bit with a couple of facts. And I know as a talk show host, that's not my job. My job is to make you guys angry. And I do a pretty good job of that most nights. But I'm just going to temper some things with some facts before we get too far down this road. One, again, these are people who have been evaluated and found to be not dangerous based on doctors at McNeil Island and other therapists, I'm assuming counselors, whatever. So these are people who've been released from there and they're transitioning back into society through more or less a halfway house or an LRA. Now, whether or not you can believe that, I don't know. Having taken some criminology classes in college, I can tell you that the number one thing criminologists will tell you about rapists is that they are the most likely ones to be recidivists. They're the most likely ones to commit the crime again. Murderers, by the way, least likely, interestingly enough. Two, there are several studies on halfway houses, or LRAs in this case, in the United States, and none of them show that they are actually dangerous to the community. You can believe them or not believe them all you want, I don't care. I'm just saying, if you look up studies on halfway houses or LRAs, like we have in Washington, that might even house rapists, they actually do not pose a danger to the community other than a very psychological one. They don't even lower property values. And the reason why is because the people who live there aren't just allowed to freely come and go. They have ankle bracelets on. They are monitored. They have curfews. They have a schedule that they have to stick to. And if they don't do that, well, then they get put back where they came from. And third, and this is the most disturbing thing I'm going to say, you might not realize this, but you already have dangerous sex offenders in your community. Pretty much no matter where you live. You can make this all about them moving the sex offenders into one house and it's compounded, fine. But you have sex offenders living in your community, and I'll explain that. I was scared as a father. I was scared reading this. I have two sons. The idea that some sexually violent predators could just be moved at the whim of the DHSH, into a neighborhood where I live is terrifying. And I thought about it. I was like, well, how well do I know my neighbors? And I looked on a couple websites like Family Watchdog, which you can all go to. It's totally free. And you can see that even in the town I live in, which is a very nice small town, there are about a dozen sex offenders, not just in the town, but in the like 2 mile radius of where I live. And not just sex offenders, there's child sex offenders as well. They specifically label those on websites like Family Watchdog. So I guess with that in mind, my question is, how is a less restrictive alternative house or halfway house for these sexually violent predators worse than just these people who are not living under any restrictions? They're just in your neighborhood. They are there. The only way you know about it is by going to a website like that and looking them up. However, having said all that, what the hell is going on here? I have no problem with the idea of people getting help. And I have no problem with the idea of people transitioning back into society. I do have a problem with that idea being tested out in my neighborhood. It's one thing for me to be able to rationalize it and say, well, there's plenty of sexual predators around anyway, which is not exactly rationalizing so much as upping the terror level and then stepping it back down to talk about this. It's one thing for me to rationalize it, but what the governor's doing is not letting people know if a violent sexual predator is in their town before putting them there, not notifying the community, not allowing them to have a meeting about it. It's like not telling people on the beach in Jaws that there's a freaking shark in the water. It just, I gotta say, Governor, it's bad optics. That's all. It's just bad optics. From the text line at 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Jonathan, this is what Democrats want. They are the pro-pedophile party. You spelled pedophile wrong, by the way, Dexter, but I don't think that that's true. It's been a while since I looked up the Democratic Party platform, but I'm pretty sure they don't have supporting and normalizing pedophilia in there specifically. And the people that are being put into these communities aren't all pedophiles. I'm sure some of them are, but not all of them are pedophiles. And I'd also point out that, you know, Jeffrey Epstein had a lot of Republican clients as well as Democrat clients. I don't think that that particular disgusting disorder is specific to ideology. I'm just saying, I think that it runs the course both sides. Yeah. Moving on. Let's go to something lighter. Didn't we just hear that everyone was leaving Seattle? Well, apparently, Seattle is not dying. According to the Seattle Times, from July 1st, 2021 to July 1st, 2022, and this is from the census, Seattle had a net gain of about 17,750 people, bringing the total population to 749,000 people. So anyway, the only important number there to focus on is a net gain of almost 18,000 people. The city's growth rate for the year is about 2.4%, which is, by the way, easily the fastest amongst the 50 largest U.S. cities. The rate of growth is actually comparable to what we used to see in the 2010s, which I find ironic considering ever since I started on this station and started really following the news in Seattle, I've been told that Seattle is dying. Seattle is a cesspool. Nobody's living. It's a ghost town downtown. Everybody's leaving. It was only a couple weeks ago that we were talking about everybody leaving. But apparently they're not, and apparently Seattle is the fastest growing city in the country. So,
yeah, let's see those people get on Mercer Street, you know?
Yeah, or Pioneer Square, like anywhere. I mean, there are plenty of places in Seattle that you go that are crowded all the time. It's not a ghost town, and it's not just junkies or people smoking fentanyl. It's plenty of people. When I was in downtown Seattle a few weeks ago, the only thing that I saw that made me go, well, maybe there's something to how bad some people say this is, was at the Target on University Avenue. That was it. It was bad. Not the Target itself. The Target was fine, but it was outside of it. There was a guy smoking fentanyl, and there was a guy pulling soda cans out of the garbage and throwing them into the street.
Boy, they've been doing that for a century, I feel like, though.
Yeah, but that's nothing. Again, that's nothing new. It's nothing you wouldn't see in any other city. I mean, whether that's Boston or whether that's St. Louis, actually, you would see it a lot worse in a lot of other cities like Detroit or St. Louis or Kansas City even. Here's the interesting thing about this, though. We are the number one growing major city in the country. Do you know the reason why we're growing?
The Bellevue police pushes all the homeless people over to Seattle.
This is based on the census, so I don't actually know if the census counts unhoused people. That's actually an interesting thing that I need to look up now that you put it in my head. But it is not. It is actually the opposite. It's because Seattle is building more housing than cities that are losing residents. We're building more housing than a lot of other cities. And because it's also a tech capital, I think on top of that, we're going to see a lot of people moving here because of the AI revolution or whatever BS buzzword we're going to use to call it, because Seattle is the home base for a lot of cloud storage when it comes to software. So it's going to lead to a lot of people moving here and a lot of new jobs in the area. The only thing I would say that's a negative here is that while more people are moving to the city, and that's great, we need to keep up the housing. We need to not just have luxury apartments and things like that. We need places where regular middle-class people can live and afford to live. We need places where somebody who is, whether they work on, you know, the light rail, or whether they're a teacher, or whether they're working at Starbucks or McDonald's, we need places where people like that can still afford to live. Whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know. But it would be nice to see. It would be extremely nice to see. Do you feel, Max? I mean, you. I don't know much about you. Let's get to know Max a little bit. Max, have you lived in Seattle your whole life, or you just moved here?
I moved into the city full time 9 years ago, and I am born and raised in the beautiful Federal Way, Washington.
Federal Way, Washington. Okay, that is an interesting place to be. From did you like growing up in Federal Way?
It put hair on my chest.
Is that from the chemicals or?
It's from the streets.
From the streets, man. Okay, that is interesting. But you've lived in Seattle for 9 years. Do you feel like the reports that we get and a lot of the negativity about the city is well founded, or do you believe more reports like this, like people are moving to the city because it's awesome?
No, they take an incident and over amplify it. It's very embellished reporting.
There's actually something I want to talk about next regarding that. Seattle was just named the king of dog poop, the number one city in America, the number one city for growth, but also apparently the number one city for dog. So is that true? Because the data that they use to collect this is not exactly, I don't know, scientific. Or is it just another example of something Max was just saying? And Seattle is a lot of things, a lot of great things. Smart, industrious, ambitious. But I think we also complain a lot. We'll talk about that next on Cairo Nights.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Cairo Nights, how you doing? My name's Jonathan Weir. I just, during the commercial break there, was just watching some of the Lakers-Nuggets game, and I saw on Twitter that Queens? Yeah, sure, why not? DraftKings tweeted out, if you were a coach, how would you stop Nikola Jokic? And if you don't know, Nikola Jokic is a 7'1" Serbian man who is like if a tank was taught to play basketball, that's pretty much what he does. He's a fascinating person to watch. He's like the slowest person on the court, and yet he is the most effective basketball player I've ever seen. It's insane.
Really the modern generation Shaq who can shoot a free throw.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And yeah, it's I never want to say that anybody is an improvement on Shaq, considering that he was probably in his prime the best player of all time. And I don't mean like he's better than LeBron overall as far as a career. I'm just saying those prime Shaq years, I don't think anybody was more dominant than him. But Jokic is up there. I don't know how I would stop Jokic, but it made me think like that would be LeBron on the court watching Jokic run away from him, and LeBron would just pull out a dart gun real quick and start like shooting darts at him. It would just see how many it would take for him to go down, because if you watch him, he kind of runs like he's getting hit with darts. Like that's how he runs, is like in slow motion. Or Platoon. Yeah, he's just.
But
he still gets down the court.
Yeah, every footstep is 6 feet. I mean, if he was a running back in the NFL, oh my God.
Jokic? Yeah, well, I'd he'd be the slowest running back, but you wouldn't be able to stop him.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter what your 40 speed was.
It wouldn't
was.
Matter. Yeah, yeah. So, in Seattle, a recent study revealed that we have a major problem. According to the Dog Advisory Council, they analyzed Twitter data, which obviously, especially since Elon took the site over, is incredibly reliable and 100%, especially if people have paid for the privilege of looking important with their stupid check marks. But the Dog Advisory Council analyzed Twitter data to find that cities where people complain the most about bad dog owners, obviously they thought, well, that's where people, the most dog poop is being left behind. That of those cities, Seattle is the worst. That people complain about bad dog owners the most in Seattle. Seattle averaged 58.3 complaints per 100,000 people, specifically about dog poop. The other cities were San Francisco, Pittsburgh, and Denver for the top five. It was complaints involving like letting dogs off their leashes in public, barking dogs, and of course not picking up after their dogs.
Denver shocks me.
And Denver shocked you?
Yeah, I just got back from Denver, and that's...
And you didn't step in dog poop the entire time?
And what blows me away is everything is so spread out in Denver. There's so much land there. So everyone's got property.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe people are letting their dogs poop, but you just never run into it. You know, you get to a more densely populated place like Seattle, and all of a sudden you're just... It's just like a milk crate challenge, but with dog poop. First of all, I do want to say that this is not the most scientific study. It's analyzing Twitter data. That's not scientific at all. It's not actually interviewing people in those specific cities or anything like that. It's just taking their word for it. And there's no way to qualify this. I don't know if this is actually true as far as the dog poop is concerned. Are we the worst city in the country when it comes to dog owners, when it comes to dog poop? I don't know if that's the case, or do we just complain about it the most?
Mm. I believe it,
because
actually.
That's where I'm going with this. I've said this before, and it's not the most popular thing to say on a station in Seattle, but I'm going to say it again. Seattle complains more than any other city I have ever been in. And I think I know why, but it's a little complicated. Seattle complains about if there's a shooting, the whole town is under siege. When the chop happened, oh my God, it's anarchy everywhere. If there's people, obviously we have a homeless issue. I'm not disputing that. And obviously we have a fentanyl issue. I'm not disputing that either. But the way we talk about it, you would think you can't go out your door without, you know, stepping on needles or stepping over somebody smoking fentanyl out of tinfoil. Seattle complains a lot, and I think the reason why is because if you look at where we're at geographically, we don't really have any rivals, unless you count Vancouver. But amongst American cities, we don't have any rivals. You can count Portland, but they're not as big as us, and are they really a city? They're more like a flea market that has a mayor. So I don't know if they count. So I'm saying Seattle doesn't have any rivals. And just like America after the fall of the Soviet Union, we turned on ourselves. When we didn't have a rival, when we didn't have a main enemy, we started looking inward and finding reasons to hate ourselves. And I think that's a little bit of what happens in Seattle. I think we can't, like, I grew up in St. Louis, and St. Louis is awful. It really is. It's a violent city. It's very run down. It's got a lot of problems. But it's not nearly as bad as you would think from the media. And the people who live there are convinced that things are worse in Chicago. And if you live in Kansas City, you're like, well, at least we're not St. Louis. If you live in Boston, you're like, well, at least we're not New York. And if you live in New York, you go, at least we're not Philadelphia or Boston. The best you can say in Seattle is at least we're not Portland, but that's such a low bar. And I think that's what it is. I think we just like to complain more than anybody else. I'm gonna ask this question And I know the answer to it, but it's something that occurred to me while I was reading about Seattle being the king of dog poop when it comes to having the most amount of it on our streets, according to a Twitter survey. Whatever happened to white dog poop? Now, Max, you're what, 32, I think?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about when I talk about white dog poop?
Oh, yeah. It's
I'm not talking about purse dogs pooping because it's you know, white women letting their dogs poop. Oh. No, yeah, it was white, it was chalky, it was gross. And it doesn't exist anymore. You don't see it anymore. I've talked to my 14-year-old about this.
Climate change.
He picked up, I had him go pick up dog poop in our dogs in the back in the part of the yard where a dog goes to poop. And I had him go pick it up. And I was like, hey, just out of curiosity, was any of it white? And he was like, white? What are you talking about? I was like, well, that was like a thing in the 80s and 90s growing up. Whenever I picked up dog poop, some of it would be like just white, bleached, chalky stuff. And he was like, you're out of your mind. He's like, unless the dog is sick, there's no reason that would happen. Well, actually, the reason why it happened is kind of interesting. It's because dog food is so much better now than it used to be. It used to be that commercial dog food had a bunch of bone meal in it to provide calcium. Now we have different ways of providing calcium, and calcium requirements have changed. So the color, consistency of and smell of dog waste is now forever different. See? The more you know. The more you know, everybody. I'm sure there was at least one other person out there wondering what happened to white dog poop. At least one of you is freak enough to have joined me on that rabbit hole. Next, on Chironites, we're going to talk about how today is actually a sad anniversary in Seattle. We lost two incredibly important and beautiful people on this day. Who were they? Well, we'll talk about it in a few minutes on Chironites.
You know, gentlemen, that is hell. And there is another place below hell. I will remember everything. I forget nothing.
Chironites, how you guys doing? Happy to be joining you today on what is actually, for me anyway, and maybe for many people in the area, a somber day. Today is the 43rd anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens, which I was not alive for. I was born a year and a half later, but it's also, and I didn't know this until separate people pointed this out to me today. Today is also the anniversary of the day that Chris Cornell from Soundgarden died. Now, obviously, we know about Chris Cornell, and he was an amazingly talented musician, an amazing singer, grew up in the Seattle area, went to school in Seattle, was a big part of the grunge movement, and I think one of the top three bands in that whole movement. But I lately have become a huge fan of Harry Truman. Now, I'm not talking about the president. No. Many of you who are aware of the Mount St. Helens explosion probably know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Harry R. Truman. This is a guy who served in World War One. He was, after World War One, a prospector. Then during the Prohibition era, was a bootlegger smuggling alcohol, I believe, from Portland into Seattle. Then he opened a lodge on Mount St. Helens that he ran with his wife. And here's, I'm not a fan of the guy necessarily because of how he went out, even though I respect it. I'm a fan of him because this is in his Wikipedia bio. Harry was renowned for hating everyone across the political spectrum. He hated Republicans, he hated hippies, he hated young children and the elderly. I love this man because I see a lot of myself in that man. Just whoever it is, if they're a little bit too brash, a little bit too in your face about their policies, it just kind of pisses me off. He would probably made an excellent talk show host, by the way. But of course, the reason we know Harry Truman, Harry R. Truman, is because he refused to leave Mount St. Helens, and he died when it erupted on May 18th, 1980.
One of the most epic interviews, too.
He gave the most epic interviews, where they went up and talked to him, and he sounds exactly like an old-timey prospector. And he was just like, I'm not leaving. I don't care what happens. And it's funny because he gets kind of brushed off as a science denier. And I think there might have been a little bit of that mixed in. But I genuinely think that this was a man who was like, I'm not a coward. And I'm 83 years old, because he was 83 when the mountain blew up. So, I mean, if he just hadn't been on Mount St. Helens, he'd be 126 now, obviously. He wanted to go out on his own terms, which I find respectable. Several other people died when Mount St. Helens erupted, but a lot of them were looky-loos and tourists and people who just wanted to get close to the mountain. And there was obviously a geologist that also died, less of a looky-loo and more like somebody who was doing their job. But Harry wanted to go out on his own terms. Harry wanted to die without feeling like he was fleeing. And, according to him, he needed to go down with the lodge that he loved so much, place that he and his wife had built. And there's just something admirable about that. Whether you think it's heroic or not, I don't care. There is something very admirable about it. And I don't have the courage to have been somebody like Harry Truman. I know how I'm going to die. Most likely, I'm going to die in a hospital bed, you know, wheezing my last, being pumped full of drugs that make the pain a little bit easier. That's how many of us will probably go. But he was like, no, I'm going to be crushed by a mountain. And I just find that amazing. So in honor of both Harry Truman and Chris Cornell's passing on the same day, though obviously several years apart, I put this little thing together.
No, I'm not going to leave. Yeah, right, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay here. If I left, it'd kill me. If I left this place and lost my home, I'd die in a week. I couldn't live. I couldn't stand it. So I'm like that old captain, and by God, I'm going down the ship. I said, if the damn thing takes this mountain, I'm going along with it. I'd rather be dead for than to live without it. Isn't that crazy? I'm stupid. Okay. The people see that. They say the craziest man in God's green world is old Truman.
To Harry and Chris. Two men that I would never, ever, ever, ever have the courage to be or even honestly try to emulate. This is how big of a coward I am regarding Chris Cornell. Been in a lot of bands and played, you know, 90s covers and things like that. Don't even try. Don't even try to do Soundgarden covers. Because I'm just like, no, because I can sing okay, but I it would just sound so bad. Because I'd be trying so hard. There's just no way to do it. Just no way. Coming up on Kyra Nights, we're going to talk about a bunch of things, some national stories. For instance, there is a professor in Texas who thought that he caught like every single person in his class cheating because he fed their answers into ChatGPT. Well, turns out that's not the most effective way to figure out if people are cheating. Now he's in the crossfire for it. Or the crosshairs for it. I guess the crosshairs, they could be, there could be crossfire between crosshairs. Why not? And has Ron DeSantis learned his lesson when it comes to messing with Disney? I don't know, but we'll talk about that next on Cover Nights.